This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm delighted now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe, Debriana Mancini. Her new one-woman show is called The Meatball Chronicles. It opens tonight. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So you and I are both Italian.
Yes, we are.
And you grew up, it's so funny because I didn't know this about you, but you have a special meatball recipe that came from who, your grandmother?
Well, it's kind of all passed down through my family, as recipes often do. You know, when everybody cooks, it just moves through the family and it kind of iterates as they go. Some things stay the same, you know, if you have a deep connection to the way a family recipe has always been made, and then others evolve.
So the meatball is basically the kind of frame for the story that you're telling.
That's correct, yeah.
Tell us a little more about the story.
Well, the story is set up so that each of the chapters of the story are told in the ingredients of the meatball. So there's pork, there's ground beef, there's minced onions, there's breadcrumbs, and each of those ingredients stimulates a family story or something that happened to me that relates in some way to or generates a memory for me of that ingredient. And then all the ingredients come together at the end in the way that a meatball does, somehow.
Where is your family originally from?
Well, that was a long journey, actually, to figure that out. Both sides are from Italy, and this is a kind of a funny story. I never really knew where my mother's side of the family was from because they all, most of them, there were 15, grew up in Marseille because of the war.
She was one of 15 siblings?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I think 11 that actually lived through to adulthood. So they were always speaking French to each other, and they always spoke Italian to my grandmother. And none of them really liked to talk about the Italian part for some reason. They were very attached to the French part.
Right.
So I figured out where I was from on my mother's side because I was watching the very early stages of the Food Network. Mario Batali, when he had his first show, he would pull down the map of Italy and say, we're going to cook this and this today because, and it comes from this part of Italy because that's what they grew there or that's what they produced in that area. So I was watching his show one day and I went, oh my God, I'm from that part of Italy because that's what my grandmother always made. So on my mother's side, it's Sansevero, which is kind of in the middle part of the boot. And actually, there's still family there. So yeah, that's my mother's side, which is generally mostly what I talk about in the show because we all cook on my mother's side of the family.
Just out of curiosity, did the French side of the culinary tradition get passed down?
Not really. No, it was really, we really cooked Italian food, although everyone on my mother's side of the family were really, really good cooks. And so they all cook, like I do, a lot of different things. So one of my aunts had a Chinese restaurant when she married a guy who was in the Air Force and they lived in Taiwan. And so she learned all of this Asian cooking and she started an Asian restaurant. Well, I mean, really, talk about cuñones. She was starting an Asian restaurant in Taiwan and she did really well.
Oh my goodness.
I know, it's crazy. And so my whole family cooks like that. They cook what they want and what they feel tastes good, but you know, a lot of it's Italian.
So talk a little bit about the themes in your show that are inspired by the food. Food, of course, being the basis of everything. And I mean, you are what you eat is a cliche, but it's also really profound.
Well, it is. And I think we all know this, whether you cook or not, when you visit or when you're having a party in your home, everyone seems to go to the kitchen. I don't care how small it is, how big it is, how big the rest of your house is. People seem to gravitate toward the kitchen because that seems to be, in my estimation, the heartbeat of your home.
Yeah.
It's what you give to sustain. And so it was a natural evolution in terms of the way I wanted to tell a story, to use food as the framework. And the meatball seemed to be the best sort of framework for that because the story, I guess I would call it kind of a love letter to the way I was raised, the good parts and the bad parts, and to the journey that's brought me to the place that I'm in now. And so that set up a great framework for stories that don't, I mean, they're not actually stories about onions, but things that made me cry, or things that evoke those feelings. Like ground beef isn't exactly a story about ground beef, but it was a time when I felt completely mixed up and trying to pull myself together. In the way that you pull a meatball together in the ground beef is a way that pulls together in whatever form it does, as a meatloaf or as a hamburger, as a, so that's kind of what the metaphor is about for me. But I think it's in a lot of ways, it's a love letter.
Would you like to maybe give us a taste of what you're going to be performing?
Oh, geez. I hadn't thought about that. It's hilarious, though. I think several people have asked me that question recently, and I don't know if anything that I would do would make sense out of context.
Oh, okay.
Because the stories really do weave together. There's a very definite arc of the story, and so I think it makes more sense in context.
Where do you start? Where are you? I mean, you're Debriana in
this
story.
Well, yeah, and that's a very different thing for me in terms of solo performance, which is very different than doing someone else's work. This is a very intimate space that's created when you do solo performance. You are really super engaged with the audience instead of having a fourth wall there. So I am myself when I walk out. I'm in present day time, but I'm trying to figure out why I keep crying through this entire preparation of making a meatball dinner. And then I go through the story of each part, which brings me together at the end, and I finally have a revelation about why I'm crying and what that's generated in me. So I start in present day and end in present day, but I go back and forth between present and past.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Wallingford, Connecticut. It's a town that's outside of, like, it's in between two major cities in Connecticut, like Hartford and New Haven.
Right.
So at the time when I grew up there, as I say in the story, it was a small rural town then with large apple and peach tree orchards nearby. And I'll just say this, and it was then in that low-income kitchen that I learned how to cook.
Do you feel like your parents retained their Italian ethnicity?
Well, I guess if you relate it to food, in a lot of ways, yes. My dad was a stonemason, and that was passed generationally. My granddad was too, and that's a very Italian thing to do.
Very much so.
Yeah, except my dad had all girls. And so I always crack my dad up because I'll do stuff around the house. Like I'll mix cement if we're building a patio or whatever. And he always laughs because I'm the closest thing to still being a stonemason in our family, because nobody else really passed that from my dad. So in some ways, yes. And in some ways, no.
So the Meatball Chronicles is your story, and I think it's so interesting for us, for audiences, having seen you act in so many different plays mm-hmm. over the years here in Santa Fe, and I occasionally will turn on the TV and see you in a movie where that was made in New Mexico, or a TV show. Mm-hmm. You're doing some of that. Are you still doing film work?
Oh, definitely. I just did my second Jeff Bridges movie, which isn't out yet, called Comancheria, and I have I'm a reoccurring so far on Better Call Saul in the second season. And it looks like I'm coming back, but we're not sure. You know, they never tell you anything on that show, but yeah.
Right. But so having seen you in so many different personalities, to see you as yourself, does it feel like a kind of exposure that, I mean, does it feel more vulnerable than doing other kinds of acting?
Oh my gosh, yes. It is more vulnerable than any place you could, I think, possibly be as a performer, because first of all, this show is written by me. It's stories from my life, and there's nobody else on stage. So it's sort of, well, as my director, Tanya Taylor Rubinstein, says, it's a free fall. And that's really what it is, because there is no place to hide. There's nobody else's words to hide behind. There's nobody else on stage with you. Although I have to say, there in my show, there's a second component which doesn't always often appear in solo performances. There's a video component which has been put together by my husband and myself, and the video component isn't exactly an exact replica of what I'm talking about at the same time. So it's more abstract in a lot of ways, sort of like Laurie Anderson's movie Heart of a Dog,
right,
where some of it was, you know, like there was a part where she was talking about a sad thing and it was a rainy day. It wasn't necessarily a replica of what she was saying, but it evokes that feeling. And so there is a video that goes along with my telling of the story, but it's not an exact replica of the story.
Are you using any like family materials, photographs, or things like that?
Some, yeah, some. There will be some that will be sporadically throughout the video component for sure, but it's not all that.
One of the things that is so cool about this particular performance is that you've teamed up with Chef Martin Rios, mm-hmm. and are doing a dinner as well as performance for those who want to do it, or for everybody. How's it work?
Yeah, he's created a special price fix menu. That I still don't know yet. He's still kind of working it out.
We're going to guess it's Italian. There's probably a meatball somewhere in it, yes.
He's inspired. I delivered all the ingredients and all the things that I talk about, and I asked him to create whatever he wanted from his inspiration. So he'll have that price fix meal available during the two-week run of the show anytime, so you don't have to go the day of the show, or you can go back as many times as you want to have that meal during the two-week run of the show.
I'm going to guess that some of our non-Italian listeners don't realize that you need pork in the meatballs.
I do.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. I think some people add veal, some people add turkey. You know, the beautiful thing I think about sort of comfort food or peasant food, I guess, would be a meatball for sure, is that you use what you have.
Yeah.
And so I think a big component in that is love in your ingredients. It's a gift of the heart to create food for others, I feel, and that's really what is a driving force in my story for sure.
You have inspired me because somewhere in a notebook when I was in my 20s, I went to my Italian grandmother, who actually died on my 30th birthday, and said, "Can you tell me your meatball recipe?" Which she did, and I wrote it down, and somewhere it exists, but I don't know where.
Yeah. You know, the thing I think that I was really careful about in the creation of this piece was that I wanted people to be able to access their own memories about food and what that generates in them, because everyone has something. And so I know several people who, over the iteration, long iteration of this show, as I was workshopping it and stuff, have asked whether I was going to cook on stage. And honestly, that was a push for me in the beginning when I created this piece. I thought, well, how cool would that be if I could just cook while I'm talking? And then I realized
that... And fill the theater with the smell.
Yeah. But see, if I fill the theater with a smell, then it's my smell. And it's not your smell. And so then you get to say, well, that doesn't smell like my grandmother's sauce.
That's so interesting.
So I didn't want to take up that space. I wanted people to be able to go into their own place and not be interrupted by, yeah, my grandmother didn't use those onions that way, or didn't smell that way, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, there is so much to be said, and I actually love staged readings and one-person performances because there's so much that is evoked by the words that you don't need the visuals or the other senses necessarily.
Yes.
I mean, smell is not a normal part of theater performance, but let's say it were. Leaving that to the imagination, it's like that kid once said, I like the pictures better on the radio.
Yeah, exactly. It's a place where magic is created, and that's what theater is. That's different than a lot of other art forms, even, you know, in entertainment. It allows you space to fill in all the details. And I, like you, like a sparse stage, because it allows the audience to really engage if they're engaged in the story.
The Meatball Chronicles opens tonight. It's Friday through Sunday, this weekend through the 22nd of May. at the Rail Yard Performance Center. You can call 820-0919 to reserve the dinner. You can go to themeatballchronicles.brownpapertickets.com. Debriana Mancini, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. I should just say the 14th performance, which is this Saturday night, is a benefit for Kitchen Angels. So that's outside of the normal pricing. So just check that out on Brown Paper Tickets.
Excellent. Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.